Disclaimer: this content is meant for information only and not as a diagnosis or medical treatment for any condition. If you or a loved one needs help, please seek out a qualified medical professional for assistance. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Katie Oshta, BSN, RN, IBCLC, and Infant Feeding Specialist. Quench your thirst for knowledge and travel with me across the nation to discover, learn, collaborate, and better serve clients from all over the globe. Let's ride and thrive together. Today on the podcast, we have Judy Rosa Arguzzi, who's been an occupational therapist for 50 years and has treated all ages and diagnoses. In 1989, Judy took her first myofascial release course from John Barnes, physical therapist, learning more about the fascial system, and says it was a life-changing course. Judy has taken many myofascial courses since and teaches the pediatric myofascial class all over the country. In January 2017, Judy's clinic began using a balance tutor as the first clinic in the United States to use one. It has been highly successful in improving physical skills in individuals diagnosed with stroke, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, autism spectrum disorder, and sensory processing difficulties. The balance tutor helps improve balance and proprioceptive awareness of where our body is in space. It also helps improve reaction time, reducing the possibility of serious injury when we fall. Judy was born in Indiana, has four grown children, four grandchildren, and a great-grandchild, and they're an integral part of her life. When she's not working, you can find Judy enjoying time with her family, hiking, camping, biking, and traveling. I'm so excited to have Judy on the podcast today. So please welcome Judy to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today, Judy. I am so happy to be talking with you and to be getting this information out. Myofascial release is one of my favorite things, and I know you love it too. So I just thank you for sharing your time with us and helping get this information out to providers.
Oh, thank you so much, Katie, for inviting me and asking me, because yes, I love to share it with others. And the more we share it with, the better it will be for our society.
Right. I think we just need to have more conversation. That's really my goal with the podcast, is to get providers all talking to each other. There's a lot of us who see the same families, right? A lot of people who work with new families and babies. And I don't find there's enough communication between the providers. And that's my goal here, really, is to get conversation started. Have us, you know, I don't see things the way a dentist does, the way you do, the way a chiropractor does, or any other provider seeing these babies. I just have a lactation and nurse lens. And so when I learn from you or learn from a dentist or a chiropractor or someone else, I can really kind of expand what I understand and what I can see for the families.
Excellent. I definitely agree. The more communication we have between all the different areas, the better it'll be for the families.
Definitely. I find that there's a lot more, the more we can all start to say the same things too, and really have more clear language for them. You know, that when I worked in the hospital, one of the things we used to tell parents is that as a new parent with the sleep deprivation, the stress, and the amount that they're trying to learn, that they usually can retain about 10 to 20% of what we're saying, right? Like, it's so overwhelming. And
yes,
all these providers start using the same terms and start saying the same language and speaking the same way, it'll make it easier, because then our brains go, oh, okay, I know this part. I don't have to focus on that. I just focus on this new stuff, right? And it would really help.
Yeah. And the simpler we make it, the better it is for them, because they are just overwhelmed.
Absolutely. It is an overwhelming process to have a baby when it goes really well and smooth. And unfortunately, at least for the clients I see, I don't see many where it goes smooth. I'm sure they're out there. I just tend to see ones where things aren't going as well. But we also have a, you know, fairly critical lack of support in this country. So it's hard on new parents.
Well, and I think the population that we see is that 1 to 10% that has difficulty from sometimes day one of the pregnancy all the way through. So they're already overwhelmed before the baby is even born.
Absolutely right. And some of mine, even pre-pregnancy, had health stuff, and then they had trouble getting pregnant, right? And trouble staying pregnant and trouble breastfeeding. And so it's been a difficult road all along for them. And you're right. So they're coming in pretty depleted, pretty stressed out.
Yes.
So I would love if you could just kind of give just a little bit about how you got into this space and how long you've been doing it, because I know you have like a very vast and beautiful history working with families and all ages.
That's true. And I've been doing it for 50 years.
Amazing.
And in the 90s, I just felt like there was something more, because you would get a child in a really good position during therapy, and they'd come back the next week and they would have lost it. And it's like, that's just not right. You know, kids should be able to learn something and keep it, just like all of us throughout our lifetime. And so I was introduced to John Barnes, who's a physical therapist and owns two centers, one in Malvern, Pennsylvania, and one in Sedona, Arizona. And he was doing national seminars. And so I went to Chicago and took his first seminar and came back to the clinic. And my very first client was a young man who had fallen on his olecranon process, which is our elbow, and had a compound fracture. And he was in middle school, a volleyball player, and was told his arm would never be the same length as his other one because his growth plate had been damaged. And so coming back from my first course, I just heard John's words of saying the body will never go in any position that will harm it. And so his arm just started through a free movement pattern. And as it was doing it, I just followed it and supported him. And he went back 2 weeks later and had a blood supply to his growth plate. So that made me a believer very early on in my life as a myofascial release therapist. So I have been doing it for over 30 years. I love getting newborns, because the younger that a child is treated, the quicker their body is able to change and become more symmetrical. And many, many times a baby will get stuck under a rib or in, you know, around our pelvis or something, or they'll decide that they want to come out sunny side up or breech. And that just starts their life off in an imbalance to the system. And with a very gentle hands-on technique, they're able to become better organized, and their central nervous system can develop along a more normal base of development rather than an abnormal base of development.
Yeah, I love that description. I think that I tell parents a lot too, that what's different between chiropractic and myofascial is to remember the way the body works, and that our bones are really strong, but they don't do anything really. Like, they don't move on their own. Muscles and fascia and tendons and ligaments, those are the things that move our bones, right? And hold our skeletal system together. And so I will, you know, for the most part, when I send a baby to a chiropractor that is only doing chiropractic, that is not doing any sort of soft tissue body work, and they're, you know, very quickly adjusting that baby, getting those bones back in alignment in, you know, 5 minutes and sending them on their way, I typically don't see a lot of change, because then those muscles pull, that fascia is tight, and everything goes right back where it was. You know, I mean, I've had babies that have gone to the chiropractor 3 times a week for months and we've had no change. And yet I will send them to myofascial, and the first visit they come out and the parents, like, they're feeding different, they're moving different, they're so happy, they're sleeping, like it's a different child.
Yeah, it's so rewarding to see the change so fast. And I think the important thing for parents to realize is that with the myofascial techniques, we're not doing something to the baby, we're doing something with the baby. Okay. And we're simply supporting them and allowing their body to do what it naturally wants to do, but can't do without some input from the heat of our hands. And it's actually the protons and electrons in the palm of our hands that allows the body to reorganize and balance.
Right. There's that difference, right? The ideology with John Barnes is that the body will heal itself if it can, right?
Correct. Yeah, it just needs input, because it can't find the resource internally without the assist of someone else. And so once you take the time, and the research is showing now that if we hold 3 to 5 minutes, the body's production of anti-inflammatory cells increases. And so much of what goes on with both children and adults is due to inflammation. So that's the reason that the techniques are so helpful and work so well.
Right. I mean, I think that there's, again, you go back to that basic idea that the body does want to heal itself. It does know what it needs. It just can't always do it. But if we could really gently offer that input and that support to allow it to do it, as opposed to just kind of trying to force, right?
Correct. Correct. Yeah. So many of the techniques are a little more forceful, and these are non-harmful and non-invasive, and can be done on the smallest micro preemie to the oldest adult.
Yeah, I mean, personally, there was a period where I went to the chiropractor very regularly, and I was having headaches. And I remember 1 week, I literally went in every day, every single day. My atlas was out, and I was waking up with a horrible headache. And we kept popping the atlas back in, and they'd send me on my way. And I'd come back in the next day going, I have a headache again. I'm pretty sure it's out, and it would be. And it wasn't for quite a while after that that I started to understand more about what was happening, and that I was, for me, part of it was food stuff, but also clenching my jaw with my own tongue tie. And when I started having myofascial release for my own tongue tie and my headaches, the difference was astounding. I mean, I could go, all of a sudden, the headache went away, and I could go weeks between appointments and be like, oh, that's what it feels like to not have a headache. It was so different and much, much more gentle. That's kind of the astounding piece too. Like when I compare having, if you've ever seen a chiropractor do an atlas adjustment, it's one of those where it kind of looks like a, I mean, it's obviously not something done on a baby, but it does look like a, like my kids would always call it, they're going to karate chop your neck, mom.
Yes.
Right? Because I'm laying on your side and they do kind of hit it to pop it back in. But comparing that to a very gentle myofascial, and yet the dramatic difference in how long the body was able to hold those results, it's pretty profound.
Yes, very much. And, many parents are just amazed at the changes they see. An orthopedist that used to refer a lot of clients, he would tell his clients, I'm going to send you to this occupational therapist who is going to put her hands on your child, but you're going to think she's not doing anything, but I like the results. And so finally he did come in and have treatment so that he could actually give a little better explanation. But it's so true. It's just that gentle input over a period of time of 3 to 5 minutes that allows the body to create and allow a change to happen. And in our therapy training, we're so conditioned to treat the symptoms. And with myofascial release, you don't treat the symptoms. You look for where you see the lines of tension and where you think it's coming from. And in many, many cases, if a child's born with torticollis, feeding issues, tongue tie, lip tie, that doesn't just affect the area where you see the symptoms, it affects the entire body. And so with myofascial release, we treat the entire body and find that many times the cause of things in the head and neck are actually in the pelvis and the legs. And so that's the reason that the results have not been as long lasting until we discovered myofascial release.
And the body is not compartmentalized, right? I mean, we have this, especially in the allopathic medical system, we have this like very compartmentalized, right? If you have a stomach problem, you go to a GI. If you have a heart issue, you go to the cardiologist. If you have, a bone issue, you go to an orthopedist. But what happens if our body doesn't really work like that, and
Right.
that's really our body is one system, and yet we really don't have any place in medicine, in the allopathic model where it is one system. I mean, I think that was the design of primary care, but unfortunately, I don't think it really works out that way. We're still so trained to think compartmentalize, right? Like you've got a symptom of, leg pain, it must be an orthopedic thing. Right, see a leg doctor instead of thinking, well, it could be nerve or it could be back related or it could be all these other things that are related because our body doesn't work like that. It's not in pieces.
Definitely, definitely. Well, and we're seeing so many more children with tongue and lip ties, and our tongue is actually kinesiologically and Eastern medicine belief connected to our toe. It's just such a whole body system to look at and can't be compartmentalized.
Right. Actually, one of the lactation expressions, I'm sure you've heard and said it too, is that I'll say tight tongue, tight toes, and tight lips, tight hips, right?
Yes,
Like
yes.
it, our body is all one and our fascia is really all one. And so if you're pulling in one section, it's going to be felt somewhere else as well.
Right. Well, in traditional training with massage or physical or occupational therapy, we've been taught to treat, again, to treat the symptoms, and we don't wait long enough in the area to allow the collagen to be affected. And collagen is the longest molecule in the body. So what we're doing with the myofascial techniques is allowing that collagen to become a gel again or soft and to add length and not be brittle and hardened and shortened. So it really creates an environment where the body is allowed to heal. And once it feels that added length, then it can learn to move in a totally different pattern. So,
Absolutely.
take for a toe walker, for example. Many times I'll ask if a toddler comes in and is a toe walker, when you get the birth history, you'll find many, many times that there were feeding issues and tongue and lip ties.
Yeah. I always find it too with the crawling. I'll ask about crawling when I see an older baby, and a lot of times they're crawling in a army crawl or a toe crawl or dragging a leg, right? And it's always interesting to me the way that we have normalized dysfunction in this country, because you can go on, Instagram or Facebook and see all these cute videos of like, look at my baby crawling. Isn't it amazing how they figured out how to move? Yes, we do compensate, and yes, our body will figure out how to make things work, but that competency is different than compensations. Like, right, just because they can do something doesn't mean we should. It doesn't mean that we want to start out life already compensating like that.
Right. And 20% of all babies born have some kind of a discrepancy in the way the sutures have meshed in the skull. And so there's some overlapping. And if that's treated early on, then that child can develop along a normal base of development. But if it's left, then they're going to be the children that have difficulty tracking their eyes from left to right. And so they'll have difficulty reading or difficulty looking up at the teacher or at the whiteboard and then back down at the computer and being able to do their work. So it's really important that, in the ideal world, it would be nice if every baby could be, held and cuddled, holding the back of the head and the bottom of the sacrum, at the bottom of their hips and just allow them to be welcomed into the world in that manner.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that I would love to see in this country, and I think body work, especially myofascial for many, many, many more people on a regular basis would be a wonderful thing. It is really hard to find. Like, there are areas where I cannot find myofascial release therapists, or I cannot find someone trained to work with babies, and we just don't have that option. And so we find other options. And it's not like that there aren't other therapies that are beneficial, but John Barnes' method is a really special option out there. So I love the fact that you're teaching the pediatric course, because we need more pediatric myofascial release therapists. There just aren't enough in the country.
Well, and it's interesting because a lot of people will come and take the pediatric course, and some of them are just, beginners, and that's their very first course, as it is an introductory course. But many of them will be therapists that have been treating for years and years and only treating adults because they didn't feel comfortable touching a child. And they'll come and they'll find out that it's the same techniques being taught, that we're just, using a slightly different amount of pressure. And the important thing, I think, is for the therapist to feel confident enough that they're able to center themselves and be present with the person that they're treating and realize that they're not the ones doing it, that they're just allowing that child to be able to organize themselves just by the touch that the therapist is giving them.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. The first time I experienced myofascial, one of the first things I said was, I would be terrible at doing this. I'm really not a patient person. I have a hard time kind of sitting still, and like, I'm just not patient. Like, I have so many things to do. I have a busy life and a busy brain, and I have, I'm a mom and a business owner and all these things. And I've never been like a slow person. And I can remember the first time watching the myofascial release therapist. It was Kendra LeGrand in Florida with my girls, and watching her and just being like, how does she stand so still? Like, it takes a certain type of person to be able to just stand there and to really allow the body to do what it needs to do. And I honor it and love it, but it's definitely not in my skill set. Like, that would not be something. I'm just not patient enough. Like, I would not be able to do it.
Oh, don't underestimate your powers, because I think you would.
I think it's amazing to watch, though, and to just see the difference. And I think people who aren't used to using their hands to feel from someone else's body, right? Like they just may not understand how it works. But I can relate in the sense that when I was a labor and delivery nurse, right, you would palpate, you would put your hands on the patient. Like that was always a big thing. I remember, you know, I graduated nursing school in 2000 and it was so many more interventions were happening at that time, like so much more monitoring and keeping the woman in bed all the time and on the monitor and all this stuff, and a lot less actual palpation and touch, right? Because you would just look at the monitor and see things.
Yes.
And I remember my instructor or my, you know, my new nurse who was orienting me after graduating, and she would say, stop looking at the monitor. She's like, the numbers don't matter. Like, look at the patient, right? Feel, listen, touch, right? And we forget that sometimes the more technology we have. But those years of doing that, being able to put my hands on and being able to tell what position is baby in, right? Like,
yes.
Where are they facing and what are they doing? And nowadays, I feel like it is sadly becoming a little bit of a lost art. Like we just, you know, people would just bring in an ultrasound and scan and see where the baby is. But I think it's important to have some reference to where you can try to feel. And some people are definitely more adept at that than others, being able to feel through someone else's body and put their hands on and kind of be still and listen with your hands, right?
Yeah, definitely. And when I teach parents, I'll just ask them, I said, you know, can you feel the bottom of the baby's ribs? And they're like, yes. And I said, okay, put one hand on the top of their chest and one hand on their back and just sing your favorite song to them and do it at every diaper change. And invariably, a week or so later, a parent will call and they'll go, you won't believe it. The strangest thing happened. And I'm like, really? What happened? And they said, it moved under my hands. And it's so fun to hear because then you know that they've given themselves the opportunity to actually peel into the baby. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, feel those very subtle changes that are taking place. But, you know, it's just about taking time, like you say, to just be present with the baby and be holding them in just a little different manner.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of my favorite techniques is, we'll call it like melting the butter and like working in the floor of the mouth. And just,
yes.
You know, I'll tell the parents, we're just going to put our fingers in here and just do nothing, right? Like kind of hold that really light, gentle pressure, but just wait. And they're like, but should I rub it? Nope. Should I pull or push? Nope. What should I do? Just wait. And they're like, for what? And I'm like, give it a couple of minutes. And when you feel it soften, like melting butter, then you'll know. And they're like, okay. And then sometimes they do have trouble, but a lot of times I will hear back a week later at the next appointment, they'll say, hey, it melted. Like I could feel it soften. Right. And then what's really great too, is then they'll say, and then the next feeding was so much better. Right.
Yes.
The baby was able to eat better. And, you know, all these things went easier, but that one is one that is hard to do at certain ages and certain times. Like it's definitely easier on a little baby and when they're sleeping, right? A lot of times I'll teach that to parents to do while baby wearing, you know,
definitely.
Or like baby wearing is so nice because you have a little bit more mobility with your hands. Baby's kind of upright. And if they're asleep, you can kind of sneak in and do this. And they're just so soft and easygoing. But, you know, it's not the easiest thing to do on like a 7-month-old that wants to crawl and climb. They're not going to sit there for you. So you have to pick your times.
Definitely. Well, and it's a great way for the parents to bond because one parent can be holding them and entertaining them and the other parent can be doing the technique. So it makes it just a really nice bonding time also.
Mm-hmm. Just that's actually one of the things I like about teaching rhythmic movements too, is that when I see parents, there's so much that they're stressed about and that they're worried about and that they're doing. And you've got, you know, if we're doing a phrenectomy, you've got this probably a whole bunch of feeding interventions, right? You've got wound care elevations they need to be doing. You've got all this body stuff that they're doing and they're just kind of overwhelmed and worrying about doing everything wrong. And with rhythmic movements, part of why I teach it is that, you know, movement does brain mapping and it helps calm our nervous system and everything else. But I also teach it to empower the parents and to give them something to do that baby's going to like. That's going to be calming. And actually, it's really secretly calming to the parents' nervous system too. Right?
Yes.
Like that's part of my intent, but the parents would say they don't need that. But it's something positive they can do in a time of feeling kind of incompetent, right? Like when you're going through all of this as a new parent, a lot of times you just don't feel like you know what to do. You don't know how to do anything. And So if I can teach them something like this that baby likes and smiles or relaxes into them, it's a very empowering thing.
Definitely. It's the best because, you know, like you say, they have so many medical things that they have to do just to keep that baby, you know, nourished and progressing and living.
Yeah. And there's so much worry that goes along with it, especially like I unfortunately see a decent amount of clients post-release when, you know, they've already had a release that was pretty much largely unsupported. A lot of times I'll get them a month later, they'll call and say, we had a release a month ago and they said it would get better and it didn't. And then I'll find out that, you know, they had no body work, they had no lactation, they found the provider off Google, they went in and had the release and it didn't fix everything, right? And so they're already feeling so worried about everything. Well, they did things wrong the first time. Are they going to do it wrong again? You know, what's going to happen? All of this type of stuff. So finding spots to empower the parents and help them feel, just to really encourage and help them see how much they know their baby.
Yes.
You know, there's too much in medicine where parents are kind of told how to do things and not really encouraged to respect their innate knowledge and to have that connection where they just are listened to their baby and that they know what their baby needs. You know, it's too often that a provider saying, oh, your baby needs this. And the parent's like, well, I don't know if that's right. The baby seems like this is what's going on. They're like, nope, this is it. You know, their parents, especially women, are not taught to listen to our gut and to really allow to lean into that.
Right. And we have so much intuition and just natural healing skills that just kind of get pushed onto the back burner because there's so much information given to them of, you know, you must do this kind of thing.
And absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a joy to work with parents because there's so many different types and so many different ideas out there of, you know, how they want to raise their children in that. And it's just a beautiful thing to hear, see that empowerment happen and just transform before your eyes.
Right. I mean, there's so many different ways families come together. And I generally tell parents, you know, as long as you're not, you know, strapping that baby to the roof rack of the car to get him to go to sleep, I'm fine with whatever you're doing. If it's working for you guys and everyone is safe and happy, then keep going. Right. It doesn't need to fit some sort of idea of what a family should or shouldn't do, what sleep should or shouldn't look like, what feeding should or shouldn't look like. If it's working for your family, great. There's not enough in life that works. So if it works, fantastic. Celebrate it, right? Lean in.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I just was thinking back to what you said in the beginning too, when you were saying that you're that first client and how the body doesn't put itself in harm, right? And it made me think about how I've had many surgeries in my life, unfortunately. And I've always been worried that I would roll over and like hurt myself. And I never have, right? Because your body doesn't. Like it just knows, you know, I've had a broken arm and I don't roll over and sleep on that arm during the night.
Right.
Right. You just don't because your body knows and it says, oh, that's not a good idea. That's not going to feel good.
And yeah, that intuition is just so natural in there that it does. It protects us.
Right. That's that beautiful, beautiful knowing of our body. And too often we think that it's not there or we discount it, but our body really does know what it's doing. You know, I do also tell people though, sometimes you have to look at our body's goals can be different than ours, right? I've had 4 shoulder surgeries and my body's goal is scar tissue, like protect that shoulder, right? At all cost. And if it gets a lot of scar tissue, then it's very protected. Right? Scar tissue is tough. It is strong. It is not going to get broken again. But my goal is full function and movement and range of motion. And so there's times when our goal differs from our body a little bit. So sometimes you do have to look at where's the body wanting to go with this and what do I want, right? That's kind of like when I explain the wound care post-phrenectomy, it's the same kind of thing. Like the body wants to close that mouth wound as soon as possible. That is always a goal in the body is to close up wounds because it's a source of infection, right? But if we close it too soon, then we don't get the elevation and the movement we want. So our goal is that range of motion.
Definitely. And the nice thing is scar tissue is fascia. Mm-hmm. And so if it's held long enough, it does soften and dissolve and decrease.
I think about how different we understand fascia now than 20 years ago. I mean, it was so sure in science, right? That our skull was completely formed. We now have one big bone. We're not like babies. They have many skull bones. We have one. It's all completely fused form, never changing. Well, now that we understand that the sutures are fascia and what fascia is and that fascia moves, it's like, oh, well, that throws that whole theory out the window, you know, like it changes.
Well, and the sutures keep space throughout our lifetime. So even if someone comes in, you know, an older child or that is having migraines or headaches, if those sutures have overlapped and haven't meshed together, then it's like putting a puzzle of Mount Rainier with one of the Pacific Ocean, and they're just not going to fit together. But with just general input, that skull is actually throughout our lifetime able to shift enough that those sutures will mesh.
Right. I mean, I think it's just amazing how there's so much that in medicine we think we know, right? We're like sure of these things. But the reality is we're still learning all the time about the beauty of the human body. And
I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg, because a few years back, the Fascial Congress was created, which is world-renowned scientists, medical people, a conglomeration of people that meet together, and they're studying the fascia. And the scientific world is still looking at it in parts. And so now they've discovered that, you know, we've got the visceral fascia and we've got the pleural fascia, but they haven't put the pieces together to realize that the fascial system is continuous throughout our body and doesn't start and stop for different areas. And the Fascial Congress is helping to provide the bridge between the scientific community and the medical community, as well as Eastern medicine, so that it can all become a recognition of that if the fascia is treated, then we will see an improvement in all the other systems of the body.
Right. That's amazing. And I think that type of stuff is what we need. We need more evidence, unfortunately. And I think it's important to also note the fact that while we have this kind of biased system in the sense that we want double-blind, randomized, controlled studies on everything, and that isn't always possible, right? There are 5 levels of research, and a double-blinded, random, controlled study is level 5, but there are 4 other acceptable levels of studies and research, and we're not going to get that level with everything, right? It's just not possible, especially in certain populations. That's what has been one of the big issues with tongue tie stuff for many years, has been, well, there aren't enough studies to show, for example, with wound care, there isn't enough studies to show that it does anything versus, because, you know, we don't have the, you know, randomized controlled study of not doing any wound care. And it's like, well, you can't, because it becomes unethical to withhold something at that point when you really have enough to show that it's going to be beneficial, right? So it gets really complicated, especially in certain populations. And when dealing with babies, it gets pretty complicated to get good studies.
Very well. And every person is different. So we're so used to using a particular method with a particular problem. And with myofascial release, you know, you look at the areas that are hot, hard, or painful. And, you know, that's where you go to treat. So somebody may come in with torticollis where the head is tilted to one side, or the baby prefers to only roll to one side or lie on one side. And I'll immediately, you know, many times go to the pelvis, and the parent is like, oh, we've had therapy, you know, for 2 months or 3 months or whatever, and they only treat the neck. And I said, well, I said, that's fine. I said, you know, they've done some good things with the neck, but I said, we have to remember that the baby has more of their body also. So we want to treat the whole body and not just the area that's showing the symptoms.
Right. I think that there's a big part of the issue in our system is that we're symptomatic, right? We're treating symptoms and we're not looking at the body as a whole. We're not looking for a root cause. And we're trying, like you said, we're trying to treat everyone the same. And that's the other problem with a study, is that you're trying to use one treatment for everyone. And while I understand that that does give reproducible results, right? Potentially, that's the whole goal, is to have these results that then you can keep reproducing and are consistent. We are all so different. And there's a lot of things that are not going to be reproducible. You know, I've been really studying and learning much more functional medicine and trying to understand how, you know, for example, something like depression, is not going to have the same root cause for everybody. For some people, it can be a vitamin D deficiency. It could be an MTHFR. It could be a copper deficiency. You know, there could be a ton of different causes of their depression or their anxiety or their high blood pressure, right? And it's like, so putting a group of people in a study and treating them all the same really discounts how each person can have an individualized reason for their issue.
Yes.
And so it's a tough system.
It is. And hopefully the day will come, we'll look at a person as that complete system and not as parts.
Right. I mean, they talk about in functional med, they talk about the N equals one, the study of one, right? And looking at the person and trying to understand what is their body need? What is it telling you? What is lacking or abundant or not working? Because we're not all the same. And everyone has different root causes and everyone has different dysfunction. And so it's, you know, it's unfortunate that we keep trying to standardize things. And I understand why. I understand that it gives a consistency and a reproducibleness that the, you know, physicians like to be able to say, okay, well, if I see someone with high blood pressure and I give them this medication, I know it's going to work. The problem is it doesn't work like that, right? And I mean, I think we see that too with our medications in this country. I mean, some medications have only like I think most antidepressants are somewhere around a 30 or 40% efficacy rate. Like that means like 60 or 70% of the people who start with an antidepressant get not the desired result, right? Like that's more than half. And yet we still keep finding ourselves wanting to treat everyone the same.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing that's so amazing as you do the myofascial release, because you'll get these children, sometimes 6 years old, that are on like, you know, six antipsychotic medications in order to control their behavior. And you'll simply, you know, do a technique that will help the body to just find balance and for the vagal nerve to have enough space around it that it can function as it's meant to function and to help calm us. And it's just so amazing then to have parents come back in and say, well, they started reducing the medicine and they're doing fine. And, you know, being able to get the kids off some of this medication that can become so detrimental to them as they get older.
Absolutely. I think it's an unfortunate thing, but how many medications are prescribed and how once you get on one, there's so many things that say that you'll need another med to treat the side effects of the first med, right?
Right.
And it's a really unfortunate thing, especially in these growing and developing children. And one of the things I tell parents a lot with tongue tie is, you know, even if the parent was saying, well, what if we switch to a bottle and formula and we don't do the tongue tie release? And I always, always tell parents whether or not to do a procedure is always absolutely your choice and should be something that you feel comfortable with as a parent, right? That is always your decision.
Definitely.
But it's really important to not look at it as we're doing this just for feeding, or we're doing this just so that we can go to the breast, or just so that bottle is easier, or just for reflex. You know, I tell them too, if we look at it as what are we really supposed to do with our tongue, right? And so it's the start of our GI system. It controls our peristalsis and our whole movement of our gut, which then affects gas and constipation and digestion and absorption, but also that our tongue palate connection is so important. And that if our tongue doesn't form our palate and doesn't widen it out, we're now not getting good sleep, because we're not getting good airway during sleep. We're not nasal breathing. And that's the line where I always draw for parents. And I say, anytime you mess with someone's sleep, they're not going to function well. And I'm usually dealing with new parents. So I'll ask them, how are you feeling, right? Like, do you feel like you're at your best right now when you haven't gotten more than 2 hours straight in the last 2 months? Not really, right? Most of us don't. And that's what I tell parents is, how can we possibly expect these children to excel at school, to be patient, to share, to communicate well, right? And to act and to feel good when they're not sleeping well? You mess with someone's sleep and of course you're going to affect how they do in school or how they act, right? Of course.
Definitely. Well, and that whole vomer palatine area and the roof of the mouth is our center of head to toe development, as well as our suck swallow. So if a baby's born early and their face is narrower, that's going to be higher and narrower and not function as well. And so that does, it affects, you know, every system of the body, including all of our activities. So our eating, our sleeping, our just enjoyment of life.
Right. I mean, that's one of those that I love too, with the Bulmer is one of those spots that I know when that gets worked on, I'm going to see a difference in feeding with that baby.
Yes.
Right. And that the palate is such a slow, hard thing. Right. I mean, there's a lot of babies that I see that even with, good oral function improvements, a good quality release, excellent wound care, like a great result after doing all the right things, they still have a high palate. And it takes time. Our palates do not just drop overnight.
No. And I think that's probably one of the hardest things for parents because they think some of the more intrusive methods, because they're quicker, they're going to be better. And that's not always the case. Sometimes good things are worth waiting for, and it takes a little bit longer in order to see the lasting change. But once it comes, it does stay and continue.
Right. And I think that there's a lot that is so different than how our body is meant to develop, right? Like, and it all goes together, right? But typically speaking, humans were meant to breastfeed for years, not months.
Yes.
And so if you breastfed for 4 or 5 years, you've had that shaping and that development through those really important years of head growth, right? Because so much head growth happens in those first 6 years. So it changes. And it helps that airway develop, that palate develop, the whole, really this whole skeletal system in the head. And it changes everything. But when we don't have that, when we breastfeed for 6 weeks or 6 months or even a year, and then we go to bottles or soft foods or all these other things, it's like it does change how we're holding that space, how we're keeping it open and trying to develop it, and we're not getting the same palate development.
Correct. Well, and the fascial system doesn't know normal. It just knows that its purpose is to support and protect us. So it's going to support and protect us in any position that we're being held. So individuals who start out their life with something narrower than it's meant to be, the body will develop along those patterns. And then with a little intervention, that's able to elicit a change. And then the body develops along a more normal base of development.
Right? Because it all starts, I mean, the palate and everything that starts in utero with our fetal swallow and everything else. Like it's all of these things happen really early. It's all so connected. It just amazes me sometimes when you stop to think about kind of the body and how intricate all these systems are and how it is all put together. It's an amazing system.
Yes. Yeah, we're incredible beings, and the body welcomes change so much if it's just presented in a manner that it can accept and follow.
Right. So tell me, when you teach your pediatric course, what's different for these providers who've been working with adults? What's one of the big things that they need to learn to do to work with babies?
Believe in themselves and recognize the fact that they're simply taking the time to hold their hands in a certain position and take away all of the idea that they're the ones doing it and just allow the body to change in the manner that it's meant to change in. So I think doing a paradigm shift and just recognizing that they're being present and creating the space for change is what's making the difference.
Absolutely. I've seen that with providers, and it's definitely the confidence piece takes a little while. I've definitely worked with some who are newer and they're working on that confidence piece, and they're remembering that they're not there to do the work, right? That they're there to offer that input and to allow the body to do the work.
Correct.
And then I've worked with some who've been doing this much longer and are really honed in on that and have that down really well. But it's kind of cool to watch as a provider too. Like, I like watching other providers build up that confidence and get that skill and see those results. I think it's
Yeah,
a
it's
pretty amazing
beautiful.
thing.
Yeah, and usually at the pediatric course, you know, they come in many times thinking they're going to be working on a baby the entire day and a half. And, you know, we're like, no, you need to feel it on someone that's a little more cooperative and lying still. So you're going to be treating each other. So the participants do treat each other during the day and a half. And then on the afternoon of the second day, then we always hope that it'll be a newborn or a young child. and then a toddler and possibly an older, like elementary age child, so that they can see different positioning and how you can do it when the child is more active. So I think that's one of the biggest things. They think, oh, but they're not going to lie still. But there's many, many secrets in our bag of tricks of how to allow a child to be able to feel like they're moving, and we can still be positioned and assisting the body to change.
Right. I mean, I think that that's one of those things that I tell parents too. Whenever, if a parent tells me, well, I really want to go to this provider that is, accepts my insurance or whatever, this body work, and I say, okay. I said, let's give it a try. Let's see what happens. I said, but let's start with this. Some of the signs that when you know you're in the right place is that you walk in and everything feels really comfortable for kids. There's not a bunch of like breakables down low, or, they have a table that is comfortable for the baby, right? And not like some chiropractors, they'll just, I had one client, they came back and said, they put the baby on the big drop table thing. And I was like, okay, that's not okay. Time to leave. But, I've also seen some that are, great with like new infants, but really struggle with those toddlers. And I'm like, okay, we want someone who has that experience, who can work with kids of other ages and realize that, yeah, you're not going to be sitting still on the table. It's not the same thing as an adult where you can just say, hey, lay here for an hour, right? Most
Right.
2-year-olds aren't going to do that.
So, no, but there's so many ways that, you can hold and move. And some of the parents will say, oh, but, I have severe headaches, or I have back pain and that. So it's, very easy after you've done it for a while to be able to adapt things so that they can be comfortable and still engage and be present with the child.
Yeah, I've definitely watched providers who will do myofascial on the floor or under the table, right? Or with a
Yes.
box of toys or on an exercise ball, right? Like there's so many other things,
Many times.
right? But I think it's having that bag of tools because you've been doing this a really long time. And so you have a really good size tool chest, you've got lots of tools in there.
I do, and even after 30 some years, I'm still adding to the toolbox.
Well, that's
So.
because that's the mark of a good provider. I think that I always tell people there's two things I really like to see in a good provider. One is curiosity, and the other is someone who's willing and actively learning, right? I think that when we get to a point where we stop learning and we think we know everything, that's a big problem. And when we're so sure of things that we don't have curiosity anymore, that we are sure that we know why this isn't working or what's happening here, and we're not curious anymore as to what's going on in this person at this moment, then I think that that's a problem. We've definitely gotten to a point where we're not really seeing them anymore. We're seeing the issue and we're not seeing the person.
Very much so. Yeah, and I hope that's the piece that I continue to keep throughout my lifetime, because every person is different and my approach to every person is different. And you meet the child where they're at and not where you want them to be.
Absolutely. And I think that's what makes this work so different is that you're really respecting the body and the person and looking at them and saying, okay, where are you right now? And how can I help you feel better in your body today?
Yes, and every day, and parents will comment, they'll say, you just are so adaptable, and you do things in different positions, and you just never seem to get rattled that, oh, I can't do this because they're not lying still. I said, oh, I said, definitely. I said, I don't even send out that thought or that anticipation. I just, give myself permission to be centered and present with the child in whatever place they've chosen to be on that particular day.
Yeah. And, for a lot of children, still is not an easy place to get to, right? Or still is not a comfortable place to stay.
Definitely.
For many, they need a little bit of movement. And I mean, I think movement is so crucial to our life. And we have this society where we really kind of prioritize stillness of like, we're sitting in the car, we're sitting at school, we're sitting and waiting. And it's like movement is where life is. Movement
Yes.
is what humans are meant to do to brain map our body and to understand where everything is and to feel life viscerally, not just emotionally or mentally. And especially
Absolutely.
kids, right? The amount of sitting that they're required to do is so hard.
And
It's
it's not natural, you know, we're meant to
no.
move and, yeah, experience life. So.
I completely agree. I don't think kids are meant to be, sitting still for 6 hours a day at school when they're 5 years old.
Right.
And it's hard. I mean,
So.
it's hard for a lot of adults. There's plenty of people that have trouble sitting still. And I think that that's something that we need to kind of understand and look at it as not necessarily a problem, that our body is telling us we're meant to move. And so, maybe we would feel better if we got up and moved more often. And then we could have some still times. I'm not saying that we don't need to be still ever, because I think there's a lot of beauty that can happen in being still and listening or calming our system too. But I think that when we try to do it and force ourselves, it's a hard thing to do.
Very much so. And I think too, just giving the child a choice, like, I'll say, I really want to help your body today. Would you like me to touch your tummy or your head first? And, let them have a little bit of control over, where you go. And when you get the 3-year-old that comes in and just climbs up on the table without you even asking and says, "Will you do my tummy today?" You know then that you're providing something that they recognize that they benefit from.
Absolutely. Kids are really honest and they're really good at kind of paying attention to their body and knowing what works and what doesn't, right? We haven't trained
Yes.
that out of them at that age yet. And I think it's beautiful when they can speak of what they need and really be able to get it. That's so
Definitely,
amazing.
me too.
I know. And I think myofascial is something we should all be getting more, but I would definitely love to be seeing all of my clients and all of their babies getting it. I would actually love if the moms got it too. I mean, I think that's definitely down on my dream list of, first I need to get all the babies seen. But these moms are coming in with so much tension and so much pain as well, that it's like co-treating the mom and the baby would just be such a wonderful thing.
Well, and a lot of times I'll provide that as a service, if I'm seeing a baby that, the mom will get a session also, so.
That's so wonderful because they're that unique system, right? They're both that in that first year in that dyad time, their whole nervous system is so reliant on each other. So trying to help the baby be in a calm, relaxed nervous system state is not going to be very easy if you have a mom that's not, right? Like I
Right, which
always
is.
tell,
Yeah,
I
it
tell,
improves the bonding.
yeah, I tell that moms too. It's why you can't calm a screaming baby when you're crying, because it's impossible, right? Like they're relying on your nervous system to calm down. So if your nervous system is not calm, they can't calm, right? It's just, babies are so intertwined with their mothers in that first year of life or if they're birthing parent, they just can't.
Well,
So,
and what's so beautiful, so many of the techniques are ones that the moms can do on themselves or they can do with the dad. And so it just really creates a beautiful family unit.
absolutely. I mean, I've definitely done a decent amount of my own little bits here and there of myofascial. And one of the ones I like to do is the pterygoids because I will sometimes clench my jaw again, even though I've had my tongue released. And there have definitely been days where I've sat there and my 14-year-old's come over and said, "Mom, I got a headache this morning. Can you work on my pterygoids?" And she'll lay her head in my lap and I'll just sit there with my hands in her mouth. And I'm like, this might look weird, but it really works,
Yes.
and it's I love the fact that even the skeptical people will go to, a myofascial appointment and come out and just be like, wow. Because my husband was super skeptical and he's like, no, I don't understand this. I don't need it. And his shoulder was bothering him, and I was able to book and get him a treatment when we were in Florida. And afterwards, I said, "Well, how was it?" And he's like, "I don't ever want to get another massage again." He said, "I just want to go to myofascial for the rest of my life." He said it was
Yeah, it
just
is.
so
It just feels,
different.
yeah, it just feels right and so natural, and it's just so healing to the body.
Right? It's so massively different than having a massage. And I just feel like if we could do for myofascial what's happened with massage, it's like you can find massage therapists all over the place. I'm like, I want more myofascial therapists. So I want you to keep teaching your pediatric course, please.
Thank you.
We need more.
And if anyone listening to the podcast is interested in, joining our practice, just, let them contact me.
Absolutely. And I will have a link to your website so that they can in the show notes. And I think that you're doing such wonderful things. And not only with each patient you see, but really trying to change so many lives by training more therapists out there. So I thank you so much for that.
Thank you. It's a joy to be able to do it.
Well, it was wonderful. And I really thank you for sharing your expertise and your time, Judy. And I will just keep watching and seeing all the amazing things you're doing.
All right. And thanks, Katie, for having me. And I'm just very glad I got to meet you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks.
When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change you. I hope that you enjoyed the podcast today and learned something new. If you know someone who would benefit from this podcast, please share it.